14 past 9 at Sky Sports Radio. We'll get some tips for you shortly, but I'm just wondering how many hours sleep this gentleman's had in the last 7 days. I would think very little. He's had more than enough on his plate, and he's back in Australia after a wonderful run by Brayson Bowe at Royal Ascot. Chris Waller, and he joins me now. Good morning, Chris.
Hi, Sean.
How much sleep have you had?
I've had plenty.
You've got a bit, have you?
Yeah, everything's good. Just excuse my voice. It's just a little bit husky, but apart from that, I'm good.
Well, that's good. Brayson Bowe, how did he pull up after the run, Chris?
Pulled up very well. It's a long day at the races over there. They leave the stables about 5 o'clock in the morning. Travelled about an hour and three quarters, and they go so early just to beat the traffic, basically. And they have on-course stables that they stay in, and then you just take them across to the actual track, which is across the road. About 10 to 15 minutes before settling up. So completely different to what we're used to here. And then he ended up getting back to his stable about, I think, 8 o'clock that night. So really long day, but he coped extremely well in more ways than one.
It was a wonderful effort. You look, and the horse that beat him is obviously no slouch. He did run fourth in one of the big races in America and didn't handle the track, and people probably underestimate that.
Yeah, very much so. It was a competitive lineup, horses from all around the world, and obviously a horse from America beat us. That horse was given a gun ride by Frankie Dettori, and our horse wasn't drawn to get the same run that the winner got. And under the circumstances, we did the best we could, and very few horses won out wide on the track. But we had no chance of going anywhere else, in my opinion. Hey, and let's face it, whether it be a maiden at Kembla or a race, a Group 1 race at Royal Ascot, there's no use looking back at it and saying, well, if we did this, it might have been different, because you drive yourself silly. You can see that in any race, and all races are important. I know punters scream when things don't look, horses don't look to be getting every chance, but Craig backed himself, and he came basically within the neck of pulling off what would have been a fantastic ride had we won.
The interesting thing is, Chris, that obviously there's been various criticism, but the other horses who were behind the American horse finished further behind Brayson Bowe. They actually dropped off.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. I think you only have to go back to watching the last few years, and I watched the previous five, and most of the winners came down where we did.
Mm.
Sure, they didn't fly solo, but even the likes of Black Caviar, albeit a world champion that she is, she basically raced the same, Soul Power the year before that, and just didn't quite work out to as we would have liked, but no regrets. It was just a huge thrill to be part of the day, and best way of describing it to the people that haven't been there, it's just like Melbourne or Flemington Cup week, but with all the glitz and glamour of the royalty. They only have six races, so every winner's certainly given every bit of glory that they deserve, and being such an international contingent from whether it be Australia, America, Europe, just brings so many people so close together, and they talk about it in a big build-up. Everyone wants to have a runner there, and also afterwards, so it was great to be part of the action.
Chris, it's almost like now, because we've had so much success with horses at Royal Ascot, particularly in the sprinting area, it's almost like the Australian public figure, when we send a good horse over, well, we're going to win. It's just, we won't get beaten, we'll win. And there's almost a bit that expectation, isn't there?
Yeah, the attention's on the horses more when there's just one or two horses. It's different to Flemington Cup week when there's 10 Australian horses in every field. So when you've got one Australian horse or two Australian horses in one race, or three or four at the meeting, they're going to get a lot of attention, and that's true Australian sportsmanship. Every other stable or the owner gets behind the Australian horses, and that was a proud part for us to be going over there representing Australia. So it would have been great to fly the flag highly, but unfortunately the American flag got in front of us.
Chris, he's pulled up well from all reports. The July Cup, about the 12th of July, the Daly July Cup at Newmarket, is that a serious option?
Yeah, it is the definite option. providing it continues to be good over the next few weeks. There's different theories from people before me that have travelled horses, saying that their first run's often their best. And I had a chat to Aidan O'Brien before the race, and he said, if you get a chance to have another run, it'll be better. The horse will come on a lot. And Aidan's had a few from Australia, and I think Star Spangled Banner was one that he... I'm not sure it was exact when it could result first up, but I think he got better with each run. And I think he did win the July Cup. Excuse me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think he did.
It wasn't that horse. It was certainly another Australian horse that he trained.
And Alberta was another one with Paul Massaro, raced well there too.
Yeah, she got better with each run. And yeah, she was over there a good time and still raced well. So, yeah, horse seems he's come through the race well. His coat hasn't changed at all. He still looks great. And I'm sure he'll stay that way.
Finally, Chris, you're a great student of racing. And what did you? Is there anything you've taken away from there and brought back and thought, gee, I'll implement that? That stood out?
Yeah, look, you got to take your hat off to them. They race with very poor prize money. But I'd say they're pretty happy. I don't hear any trainers whinging.
Yeah.
The staff are all happy. They start a lot later than us. And it's, I feel, a better lifestyle for stable staff and trainers, and realistically that's what it should be. It's not just about the money. You got to enjoy what you do, and if your staff are happy and the trainers are happy and owners enjoy racing, it's a better place. So I think we can learn a bit off it, and there's certainly more trainers thought we're mad starting at 3:30 or 4 o'clock in the morning than not. So yeah, who knows? It's hard to make changes in any country. But the one thing I'd like to see is later starts and a little bit more relaxed lifestyle for stable staff and trainers.
What about those wonderful training tracks they have there, or out in the downs and things like that? Aren't they beautiful?
Unbelievable. To tell you the truth, I thought my horse was going to get tired getting to the actual starting point of the gallops. He had to walk. I think it was an 18-minute walk with the rider on, and then he had to do a hack canter for about a mile and a half, close to 2 miles, do his work, walk all the way back down from the work, from where he finished the work, and that would basically be another 30 to 40 minute walk back to the stable. So it's a big morning for the horses. They don't need to do much in the afternoon, but that's the way they do things. They've been doing it for hundreds of years and probably not that susceptible to change, where I think a few of the Australian trainers would go over there and probably mix things up a bit. But once you've trained in Oaks for a Derby winner, you don't change a thing. That's the way I saw things over there. But they do a fantastic job, and their horses look great, and they've got a great racing system.
Well, Chris, I appreciate your time this morning, so I know you're flat out. And if I can give you a tip from somebody who yelled out, come on down, many thousands of times, soothers, cough lollies are the best. Get onto those eucalyptus ones and just keep sucking them. You won't return a positive swab. They're all right.
Thanks, Sean.
Good on you, Chris. Good luck.
See ya.
Chris Waller, very husky there after a fair bit of travel, getting overseas and back from England. Royal Ascot. Now, this young lady would know a fair bit about Royal Ascot, I reckon. Rachel King, who's out here riding in Australia at the moment, doing very well. Good morning, Rachel.
Morning. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Were you sort of looking a little bit enviously there the last week, looking at Royal Ascot and thinking, oh, I'd love to be there?
Oh, definitely, for sure. It would definitely be a big goal to try and ride there one day. But I've ridden at Ascot, but not at the Royal meeting, so it'd be good to get there.
What sort of a thrill was it riding at Ascot?
Oh, it's brilliant. It's, you know, it's like no other. It's a real different atmosphere there. You know, just the whole racetrack and the stands, everything. It's pretty special to be able to ride there.
Now, Rachel, you've come out here, obviously, from England. How did that come about?
Oh, well, I originally just came just for a break, to be honest, when it was our English winter. Came for what was meant to be just a couple of months. Sort of get a bit of different experience. You know, obviously it's a bit nicer weather over here as well at that time of year, and just to try and learn a bit. And while I was here, I just decided I'd rather stay here and give it a go. So packed up everything and moved over here.
Well, you're writing a lot for Gay Waterhouse too. You've started at the top, haven't you?
Yeah, well, I sort of, you know, it's such a good place to learn, and you've got, you know, some of the best horses in Australia. You've got the best jockeys to learn from, and you're riding track work with them every day. So it's a huge help. You know, it's helped me massively in everything I've done so far.
How many rides had you had back home in England?
Oh, I'd had sort of probably a couple of hundred rides back home in England, but I was mainly riding as an amateur jockey. They sort of have the system works a little bit different over there. So just was doing it more, you know, as an amateur, not really a full-time kind of job.
You have almost different levels of racing there, don't you? Where you can have it almost like as a fun aspect for a while.
Yeah, definitely, for sure. Like, a lot of people like be riding as an amateur is a little bit more people just wanting to do it for a bit of fun. You've probably got another job sort of on the other side, as well alongside it. And that tends to be how a lot of them start, though, have a go as amateur and then, you know, maybe move up to the apprentice rank.
Now, who were you apprenticed to over there in England?
Well, I was my last boss I was working for was Clive Cox.
Yeah.
So I was actually just riding as an amateur for him, but riding a lot for him.
So this is the first time you basically turned professional, so in inverted commas, now you're out here in Australia.
Yeah.
All right. What sort of weight do you ride at, Rachel, at the moment?
I'm sort of only 49 kilos myself, so my weight's pretty good.
Gee, that's a real bonus, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's definitely a massive bonus.
Now, have you got ambitions to ride around Australia, or are you just happy staying here in Sydney at the moment?
At the moment, I'm definitely happy just, you know, to stay here in Sydney and sort of try and make a bit of a name for myself where I am at the moment. I was doing a lot of travelling, but it's been worth it, you know. It's paying off, so I'll keep going with that at the moment.
All right. Now, have you been to Royal Ascot as a spectator as well and got all dressed up at times?
Oh, yes, yeah. No, I used to go every year when I was back home, so it was definitely a big occasion. Couldn't be missed.
It must be a little bit different from the top hat and tails of Royal Ascot to some of the meetings you go to here.
Definitely, yeah, it was, yeah, a little bit different, for sure.
All right. Well, look, we wish you luck. Now, you got a couple of rides today?
Yeah, a couple at Newcastle, so good.
Which would be your pick?
I like the Planet Reality a lot. I rode him last start, and he ran a really nice race last start, so it was sort of first up after a break, and I think he'll come on a lot for that. I really hope he'll put in a big performance again today.
Well, Rachel, you probably would have heard of a very, very, very good Australian jockey called Mick Dittman. Have you heard of him?
Yep, I sure have.
Well, his son Luke's on the other line, and I can tell you now, Luke would love to be your weight. 49 kilos, I reckon Luke would kill to be 49 kilos.
Yeah, there's a few envious jockeys for sure.
Luke's a great rider, but it's just he's got a battle with weight all the time, and he's probably sitting there at the moment having a glass of water thinking, yeah, just get Rachel off, will you?
Yeah.
Well, look, good luck today at Newcastle.
Thank you very much.
And I hope you have a lovely stay and a safe stay here in Australia.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Rachel. Rachel King there at 27 past 9, Sky Sports Radio, and Luke Dittman joins me now. Morning, Luke. How are you, mate?
Good, thank you, yourself.
Good. 49 kilos, Rachel is.
Yeah, I'd kill to be that one.
I just thought that before. I thought, boy, you're flying at the moment. You're having a terrific run, but it's that rotten weight, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm having a bit of luck at this stage, but the weight seems to be holding out at the moment. Winter makes it difficult, but as long as it stays that way, it'll be fine.
Lee, as you said, you've been having a great run, particularly around the Queensland area there and the city there. It's been beaute.
Yeah, I'm really happy with the way it's going. My boss, Toby's been putting me on quite a bit, and I've got a few outside rides, a few different trainers, and the winter heat rolling in, so hopefully it sticks around.
Luke, just on the subject of your weight, as you say, during winter, and it is often harder because it's cold and you've got to eat something and so forth, do you find it fluctuates much?
In summer, it's not too bad. Being able to sort of drop that kilo riding work without thinking about it is a massive bonus. But in winter, it makes it a bit difficult. Like, you're sort of in and out of the sauna or the spa all the time. But as long as I can stay around the 57.5, 58 range, then it makes it easier to ride 55 week in and week out without killing myself to do it.
And I suppose it must be a blessing when you see top weights now carrying 60 kilos and at times even 61 for guys like yourself.
Yeah, exactly. not so much in town because I still got to ride them at 56 and 55 when they go around, but definitely the provincials, like, and those sort of midweek provincials where if I get on them, I still only have to ride them at 58, 59, make it a bit easier.
Now, Luke, a lot of punters listening at the moment would probably get a hell of a shock if they realise what your lightest saddle would weigh. Everybody thinks, oh, yeah, saddles and don't take much notice. I'm tipping probably about 140 grams. What's the lightest one you've got?
The lightest one I've just bought is a South African saddle, and I think it tops the scale without any gear at 100 grams.
100 grams. Now, for people going to the races today, if you pick up a race book, that'll probably weigh about 150 grams.
Yeah, so pretty much. I can get on the scales with all the silk, my pack and girth, saddle and everything for about maybe a tick or two over a kilo. So it's not much weight there at all.
There's not a lot of protection. It's not like you're going with a whole heap of packing on, is there?
Exactly. You can get a good bit, but most of those race saddles are designed now where you can just put one or two pieces of light rubber underneath, and usually that does. So it's okay at the moment.
Yeah, but as I said, for punters watching, this is a whole, you'll have whole new respect for the jocks, the girls and the guys, because those little saddles too, you could almost roll up and stick in a beer glass.
Oh, definitely. They're only tiny. I was speaking to Larry Olsen about a month or two ago, and he was telling me when he had to ride light, he had to be nearly a kilo and a half or so underneath the weight he was riding with the older gear, whereas now you can just about be on weight, on point strip, and you'll still make weight.
Well, Luke, today you got a couple of rides at Casino. You got one on the first there, Hollywood Run, and another one later on in race six. Got a couple of chances?
Yeah, which is good. I've just picked up one in the third as well for Mario Calpiano, so hopefully we can kick home a winner.
All right. Well, we wish you luck. It's great to catch up, and I see you've been having a terrific run of late and done a magnificent job maintaining and looking after your weight too. So good luck, Luke.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Luke. Luke Dittman there, a terrific rider, and he's done a magnificent job because that was... It's been a constant battle for him with the weight over the years. It's right on 9:30 at Sky Sports Radio. Now, in Melbourne at the moment, at William Inglis, they've got what they call the Great Southern Sale. It's a four-day one where they kick off with there's some weanlings, yearlings, and then broodmares and so forth. And I think yesterday there was $300,000 paid for an Exceed and Excel nine-month-old weanling. Peter Hegney joins me now, director at William Inglis. Morning, Pete.
Good morning, Sean.
That's good money for a weanling.
Yeah, it was good money, but he was a very, very nice colt. In fact, the people that bought him said that he was the nicest colt they've seen right throughout the weaning sale series this year. So, obviously, that was reflected in his price.
Peter, these days, with the weanlings, we used to call it pin-hooking, where people are going to buy them and then take them away, prepare them, get them ready for the yearling sales, and hopefully sell at a substantial profit. Is that still a real attraction?
Very much so. In fact, I think it's even more so these days, to be perfectly honest. But it's probably been done more at the top end than it had been previously. I mean, obviously, this colt that made $300,000, that pin-hooked him to go back through a yearling sale, hopefully our Easter yearling sale in Sydney. At $300,000, obviously he's got to sell very well as a yearling. But again, being a good type of colt, I think there'll be a good margin in him.
With these particular sales, the weanlings and yearlings at this sale, do you find a different range of purchases from what you get at the Easter sales?
Very much so. Yes. Totally different buying bench, actually. Having said that, we've had a great buying bench here. We've had a lot of New Zealanders here, Sean, interestingly. They're looking to pin hook to put back through their sales or even put back through sales in Australia. But they've been particularly strong at this sale. But, yes, very much a different buying bench. But having said that, it's more obviously studs and yearling preparers as opposed to an Easter yearling sale, of course, where you're looking at mainly trainers and owners are buying the yearlings. But here you've got studs and various yearling preparers looking to pin hook something to take back through the sale.
We've seen that a bit in recent times with New Zealand, where it looks like they've bought a weanling here, taken it back to put it through the sales over there, and all of a sudden, if it's by a relatively new sire and they fire like an I Am Invincible or one of those, they're sitting on a nice little profit over the other side of the ditch.
Yeah, well, that's certainly been happening because, with great respect, their sort of stallion ranks are a little thin over there in New Zealand at the moment. So to take back something that's Australian bred by a successful Australian stallion is quite attractive for them. And that's exactly what we saw the first couple of days of our sale here and also at the sale we conducted in Sydney earlier.
Pete, was it purely the sprinting bred or the sprinting up to miler types that were making the best money, or did you find some who were bred on more stout lines making good money?
Yeah, look, purely by coincidence, I'd have to say that probably the top price weanlings were more sprinting orientated, and that was just coincidental, I'd suggest. I mean, horses like Exceed and Excel and Fastnet Rock, although we know that both of those can get horses that can run a distance, but principally they're seen as more sort of sprinting middle distance type horses. And then horses like Fox Wedge and Not a Single Doubt and Commands, they were very popular. A particularly nice Reset colt made $95,000, and we know they'll get some ground. Magliadora colt made $100,000, and while yes, he gave us the Golden Slipper winner, you know, they can get over a little middle distance as well. So I think it was more so the stallion and the individual, more so than it was just the whether it was a sprinting or a staying type horse.
I love the fact that you can still go to the sales and not spend an enormous amount of money and do well. And trainer Danny Curran from Kyneton, I think it is, did that a while ago. He went to your Australia Gold sale down there and paid the princely sum of $750 for a horse he called the Big Dance. And by God, have they danced with that.
Yeah, it's very, very smart. Looking forward to seeing it come out and race in the spring. It was most impressive at its only start. And as to say, it was a $750,000 purchase as a yearling out of a Vovis Gold sale. So, no, look, the average of our sale has been excellent. I mean, the average has been up some nearly 60% on the same sale last year. That's a wonderful result. But having said that, there's some great value buying there as well. I mean, I think now from $1,000 upwards, and in the general session of the weaning sale from $500 upwards. So people shouldn't be deterred simply because the average is up and the top end is particularly strong. There are still many, many horses. I mean, the median for our weanlings across the board has been $10,000. Now, while that's a substantial increase on last year as well, there are still many weanlings that were making $3,000, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000.
Now, for people who live in Hope, this filly, the Big Dance, $750. It won the $250,000 Vobis Gold Rush at Ballarat, Bendigo rather, its first start. It ran 56.79, a tick outside the track record that was set in the 90s.
Yeah.
It goes like the hammers of hell.
That's what keeps us all in the business, isn't it, Sean? That's what we like to see. Yeah, well, it's good for the high-priced horses to be good race horses, but yeah, the whole romance of racing is about those $750 horses being successful.
You know the lovely thing? There's a quote from Danny Curran. He said, she went through the ring at 10 in the morning. No one was there.
Oh, no. Well, when that's right or not, I'm not quite sure. I guess
you can add a bit to the story if you want to, can't
you?
When you've got the chockies, you can say what you like.
Totally, totally. I'm not sure that you would have made any more had you gone through it at 2 in the afternoon.
No.
But as you say, it's for a good story.
Now, Peter, there's broodmares going through as well. Are there people still showing a lot of interest in breeding?
Yes, there are. We started with broodmares yesterday as well. We sold about 80 broodmares yesterday, but today is devoted solely to broodmares. We've got just shy of 200 mares to go through today. And then on Wednesday, we move into the racing section with racehorses and yearlings and unbroken stock. So still a variety to offer, still some nice mares to come through the catalogue. At top price yesterday for a broodmare was $160,000. Another nice mare made $110,000. And as I say, still some 200 to go today.
All right. Well, $300,000 for an Exceed and Excel weaning. That's fantastic money. And it's good to see the spenders are still there, Pete.
Yes, thank goodness they are. Well, our racing's so good, isn't it, Sean, at the moment? Our racing's fantastic. Our prize money is, we've just heard from the announcement from the VRC, from Racing Victoria, I beg your pardon, going to increase substantially, particularly in the country and maiden races, which is excellent. So I think, generally speaking, our industry's quite buoyant and quite healthy at present.
Right. Well, wish luck. Hope the voice holds out there through the next couple of days.
Good on you, Sean. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Peter. Peter Heagney joining us there, Director of William Inglis, and their Great Southern Sale on at the moment. As you heard, the money's still there for the horses.